Hello and welcome to Secondhand Film Critics, your favorite source for mildly pretentious, semi-uneducated, and highly unqualified opinions on movies. I am Kayla, and I'm here with my co-host
Noah. Back at it again.
Secondhand
Film Critics. You know, week in, week out, giving you the
month
content.
Month to month, year to year,
month to month,
forever,
week to week.
Year. So if you listened to our episode last week, you're probably looking at the title and thinking, hey, I thought that you guys were going to be reviewing the Scream movie.
This is what they're doing. They're like, that's what they did when they saw the title.
Yeah, that just didn't happen. I was kind of sick this week, and
I was sick too.
Yeah, Noah was sick, and so between having to go see it at a theater and all that, we decided to push it back. So ideally, you'll be getting that next week, and we switched some episodes around. So we've got a cinema swap for you this week instead.
You could say we swapped some episodes
you
around.
You could say the cinema was swapped.
Cinema was swapped this week. I think it's good too, though, because I feel like not a lot of people have seen it this weekend, like this opening weekend.
Yeah,
so,
like I've seen a few sure, but
yeah, I'm thinking more people might have checked it out by the time we get that episode out. So
I think, like us, a lot of people, you in your mind, you're like, yeah, I'm gonna watch all these movies. And then it comes down to it, and you're like, oh, this is four whole movies that I need to watch.
Four plus a new
one,
so
I think everyone else who's trying to, like, get through the original four as well.
Yeah, and they're not, like, I mean, maybe some people like to binge stuff like that, but I feel like they're very similar in the way that it's, like, it's not as fun for me to just go through them
all in one sitting. Because you feel like you're just getting, not more of the same, but just, I don't know. You can only watch so many slashers, like, at once or in a row before you need a break. So I think it will make for a better episode because we won't be tired of the movies, hopefully, when we actually do the episode.
Yeah. So speaking of Scream, before we get into our episode here, we have a few answers to our question of the most anticipated movie of 2022 for our listeners. And Scream is kind of one of the first big releases of the year.
Hey, don't disrespect the 355 like that.
My bad. My bad.
Come on.
I didn't even know that was a real movie until, like, because I kept seeing things about it.
It looks fake.
I was like, this isn't a real movie. Like, I thought it was a joke or a parody or something. And then I saw that it was a real movie,
It looks like a Netflix movie. Like what? Like Red Notice, like the same kind of vibe.
Yeah, yeah. So we've got a couple. Anyway. No one said that movie, thankfully.
No.
So no.
They did say
offense,
Scream
hopefully.
Though.
But Mike, did say Scream. But his theaters are closed right now. So
which is interesting. Good for wherever Mike lives for taking everything seriously. I don't know where that is.
Yeah.
Like, the bubble is the bubble that he's living in that, like, just, I guess, capitalism doesn't invade. Great. I want to go there. I don't know where that is. Because, like, I haven't heard of any theaters closing by me or
yeah, definitely not by me. I mean, we don't even have mask mandates in our theaters.
Yeah. I mean, same. So, it's great. We love just living on another world over there, I guess.
I guess so.
Then we have another big release here. Zach Smith Michaels, friend of the show, said either the Batman or Spider-Verse, which there was a lot of discourse about Batman on Twitter this week with the rating and the runtime. So it's already being in the cultural conversation before it comes out. So
I will say I am a little bit disappointed about the rating. I was hoping for an R rating on it, but I'm not
really hoping Robert Pattinson would take off that bat suit.
Yeah. I'm not mad though, you know, like I don't care enough, but like I was hoping for a darker movie. I think it's still going to be darker, but
yeah, I mean, cause you watch something like The Dark Knight and that is like very dark. And I feel like it's not held back by its rating at all. If maybe like for swears, like if they were going to swear more, I guess was the only thing you could say. But I think that from the trailers, it looks like they'll be clever enough to like get the most out of the rating.
Yeah.
I think we got another Spider-Verse shout out here, right? From God Jester on Twitter, who said, not sure if it releases in 2022,
but it's got to be Alex Garfield's Men.
Garland's.
But then
Alex Garland's.
Garland's. Sorry, it's very, this computer's very small, I'm on.
They also said if it misses this year, then their favorite is, or the most anticipated, is Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, part one. So, a lot of love for Spider-Man.
Dan said, Morbius. No, just kidding. It's Don't Worry, Darling, which was on my list as a highly anticipated. Not Morbius.
Morbius was, yeah.
Don't Worry, Darling was on my list.
I don't think Morbius is even on Jared Leto's list at this point. You know,
is it even a real movie? That's what I'm wondering at this point. Like, did they
been shot yet?
Have they ever? Because they started doing reshoots on this movie in December when it was supposed to come out in January. And I was like, did they even shoot any of this movie? Or did they just shoot a trailer and like, this movie is just never going
to
come out. Like,
so interested to
at
watch this
point,
movie.
I'm
it's
convinced
so weird.
It's not even real. Because you know what's so funny is when we were in Boston 2 years ago at this time.
Yeah,
that was when the very first Morbius trailer released.
Right, that was
because
so long
we
ago,
watched
and it looked
it
so different
in Boston on my phone.
Right, you're right. I forgot about that. It looked a lot better back then, too.
Yeah, like at that time it was like, oh, this could be interesting, and now it's like...
Maybe, hear me out, because this is Sony, right? Maybe it's like all a marketing ploy, because they're like trying to push this like multiverse thing. Maybe it's like, that's a movie that's in one of their universes, and it's like a big marketing scheme. I don't know.
Or they're trying to do like a Mandela effect, like no one ever saw this movie, but then everybody from our time is like, oh no, that was a movie that like came out. I remember seeing trailers over and over and over, and then like the kid is like, but that movie doesn't exist, Dad.
They're just creating all the fights on the playground.
We got a couple other ones here. Two different people said Babylon, Kristen and Robbie, which that was on your list, right?
Yeah, Babylon. That's, again, like, who know? It's kind of in 2022 at this point because it's limited in 2022, but then wide in 2023.
So we'll see.
But I'm very excited. And then we got one more here from JRK is their username on Twitter, and they said The Northman, directed by Robert Eggers. So, you know, we love The Northman on Secondhand Film Critics. So they said either that or Jackass Forever, which, you know, not as looking forward to Jackass Forever, which
that one got
there
pushed
was, like,
back.
So many trailers this summer, and for like I saw the
like,
same trailer.
It's
over
gonna be
and over
so weird seeing some of those trailers again, like once those movies actually are starting to come out again.
Because it opens with like the da 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 da, da we'll meet again, and then shows a crocodile, and then I could quote the whole trailer.
I could tell you all the different like bits that are in it. Like they do that bit where he's in the thing, and then the bear comes out.
Yeah,
and
the
then,
bear, like, and he's wearing like the reading books is cool or whatever T-shirt.
Yeah. I've never seen any of the Jackass movies before.
Me neither, but I've seen that trailer
kind
probably
of comedy
enough to be a whole movie.
Is not, like, I can't do that. Like, that kind of stuff grosses me out. Like, pain comedy, I can't do it. I don't, it's hard for me, personally. It's like a visceral reaction my brain has.
So let's just jump into the episode now. If you haven't listened to a Cinema Swap before, we've done three of these prior to this. So this is our fourth Cinema Swap. Basically, what we do is each of us picks a movie for the other person to watch that they haven't seen. So we can't pick ones like that they hate or that it's like we just want to watch this one again even though we've seen it a million times. It has to be ones that the other person hasn't seen.
But you
and we
have
give
seen.
Reasons for why we picked them and stuff. Yeah, obviously, that you have seen. Because if I hadn't seen it, then we would have just done a
we've never seen episode.
So... we've covered our bases on movies we haven't seen. You can tell, like, we haven't seen a lot of movies because we're able to do both these series, you know?
This is our spinoff series of our own series. It's like we're Disney making reimagining of we've never seen is one of us has seen.
One of us has seen and the other hasn't seen. Yeah, we're basically the MCU at this point, you know, our basically. Own multiverse of shows. So we have two movies here that are very different, but also by directors who are going for Oscars this year or awards.
Which wasn't sure even totally planned either.
But yeah. I know, because we picked them basically separate, and then we came together. Yeah. Like the Beatles.
I was between my movie and a different one, and then I was like, oh, well, Mike Mills is in conversation right now. So that was why I ended up picking this one. But it wasn't like, this movie has been on my list for this for a while now. So it's not like I just was like, oh, who's an Oscar person I can pick?
Right. Yeah, exactly. It was just like fate, almost.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
These are two, I think, movies that we both have been wanting to talk about for a while. Like, I wanted to talk about mine, and I think, like, I don't know, these just seem like big movies, which is why we do these series too, because it's like big movies. Like, when would we ever get a chance to talk about 20th Century Woman, like, on another episode,
unless we're doing like a Mike Mills episode or someone randomly happened to pick it for a triple feature.
Right. Yeah, so it gives us an opportunity to talk about movies that we wouldn't talk about before as well, which is always fun. So our first one here is Boogie Nights from 1997. This was my pick that I gave to Kayla. This, just a little history, is based on a mockumentary short film that Paul Thomas Anderson wrote and directed while he was still in high school called The Dirk Diggler Story, which is on YouTube. I actually wanted to watch it before we did this, but I didn't get a chance. So maybe I'll watch it later after we record this. The short itself was based on the 1981 documentary Exhausted, John C. Holmes, The Real Story, which is a documentary about the life of legendary porn actor John Holmes, which that's who Dirk Diggler is based on. That's all from Wikipedia, by the way. I just thought that was interesting to kind of open the conversation with, because that's some good history where, even though this is his second movie, I kind of like consider it his first almost in my mind, because Hard Eight is like a lot different than his other movies, and this is just like such a big step up, and it's obviously something he wanted to do even before he made Hard Eight, because he was working on a short film for it in high school and stuff. So this is like, I think, really when his career started, was with this movie. So do you want to read the little synopsis we have here? I just got this from Google, because both of them for these movies are pretty good, and I was just tired this morning, so
yeah,
we'll just
sure.
Go. We'll just go stick with Google for today.
In the San Fernando Valley in 1977, teenage busboy Eddie Adams gets discovered by porn director Jack Horner, who transforms him into adult film sensation Dirk Diggler. Brought into a supportive circle of friends, including fellow actors Amber Waves, Roller Girl, and Reed Rothschild, Dirk fulfills all his ambitions, but a toxic combination of drugs and egotism threatens to take him back down.
Wow.
Drama.
Drama, 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 drama. That's like, if we made t-shirts, I think we could have that as like a t-shirt with like a three times down.
Drama,
you know?
Drama, drama. The Dirk Diggler story.
The Dirk Diggler story. Or it should be the Dirk Diggler story, drama, drama, drama. Or that's like the quote tweet on the Blu-ray.
Yeah.
So I picked this movie. I actually watched this only for the first time last year when I was house sitting, because it was on Netflix and it was long and I had nothing to do. So I watched this movie. And obviously I'd wanted to watch it for a while. But I mean, this is kind of funny because I didn't pick it during the summer, but I wanted to only watch it when it was summer. Because, you know, it's just one of those things I'm weird about sometimes where like the only Tarantino movie I haven't seen is Hateful Eight, and I only want to watch it when it's winter. So maybe it's this winter, but if I don't watch it this winter, then I'm just gonna wait till next winter, you know? I'm just a little weird, like I'm a little
that sounds like, that. Like some drama, drama, drama right there.
But I mostly picked this movie because, well, one, I just really wanted to talk about it because I think that's a great movie. And two, because we did our Goodfellas episode, our We've Never Seen Goodfellas, last year around, I think, October or September, actually, I think it was. And you were not a fan of Goodfellas. And I think that this movie is basically Goodfellas, but more fun version of Goodfellas. Because it's, like, very unashamedly rips off Goodfellas, the entire thing.
Yeah.
And I wanted to see what your thoughts on, like, if, because it's the same core story, but I think it's, like, a different way of telling the story that might have been, I don't know. I was just interested to see what you thought about it in that way. And, again, I also just wanted to selfishly talk about it because I think there's some really fun things to talk about.
Yeah, and we originally had this on a list. We have, like, a long-running list of other right. movies for different things. And it was originally on a We've Never Seen list.
Oh, right.
And
I asked you if I could watch it. And I was you were like,
do you care
it.
If I watch this? And I was like, we have so many other movies that it really doesn't matter, you know? But now we're talking about it. And
on the
it
spin-off
worked
podcast.
Out because we have a spinoff now.
Look at us. We did it.
Who would
have
thought?
Oh, man.
Cool. Do you want me to share my thoughts now? Is that
yeah,
where we're at?
Sure. That's where we're at.
Yeah, I liked it probably better than Goodfellas for a multitude of reasons. Yeah, I thought it was good. I thought it was a little long for me, personally. Like, by the time I got to the midpoint, the whole second half of the movie, I was, like, kind of struggling to, like...
Mm-hmm.
stay engaged or like stay as interested as I was in the whole first half of the film. Cause I think mm-hmm. the first half of the film, I was like, oh, this is really interesting. I don't know where this is going. This is kind of funny and has these characters that are really funny. But I think once it kind of like shifted tones, it was a little bit harder for me to like track with it. Cause then it was more about his like downfall and it wasn't like, as I right. mean, it was still funny, like it still had kind of humor and stuff, but it wasn't as funny as the first half was.
He will rock you. He will roll you.
Yeah, but I overall I liked it. Obviously, both of these movies have incredible soundtracks to them.
Yeah, right.
And this is one that, you know, has one of the, arguably one of the best soundtracks people have said in movies. It's, like, known for having good music and having good vibes and, like, being of that time, the 70s and the 80s, and being, like, true to how cool it is. Mm. And, which I'm, like, doing coke, ODing, shooting people in the head, porn movies. Don't know how much that's my idealized version of the 70s and 80s, but it is definitely makes for an interesting like setting and interesting yeah. characters to watch, because obviously I won't be in that scene, or I don't ever plan on being in that scene, so yeah. I'm fine with
shock.
Just,
wow,
shocker.
Breaking news. My goodness.
Wow, you guys didn't know I was planning on going into the porn industry? I'm going to cut out all that.
that was funny. No, but that's a good point because it is like taking you. I mean, obviously, we're never going to be in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, that too.
But it's like even though we've seen a lot of 70s and 80s inspired things or set things.
Yeah.
And this is still something when I watched it that I was like, this is something I'm still like, I have no idea anything about this world or whatever, like these, what these people are a part of. So it's, even if you have seen like all of the 70s and 80s nostalgia movies and shows, I think this still has something to offer that isn't in those because it's offering a very specific point of view or multiple points of view, I guess, because there's yeah. a lot of different characters. I think that's actually the point a little bit though, because you were saying like, I don't know how fun it was, which I think that's kind of the point because the 70s is like the fun stuff. And then the 80s is like, oh, wait, maybe this isn't as great as we thought it was. And it's like, again, like Goodfellas, like the come down off of the high, or I guess they got high in the beginning of the 80s. And then it's the come down after they yeah. got high there, which is like that structure again, is straight from Goodfellas. And it's, especially on a first watch, even the second watch, which I liked it more the second time I watched it, but it's still a little jarring because it's so different from a traditional movie structure where it's like two halves and the climax, like the height of the, I don't know what, how you would define it, but I guess the climax or the height of the, for the characters is right in the middle of the movie. And the second half is a decline from there, and not a decline in like drama or intensity or thematic elements, but it's like, I feel like for the characters usually in a movie, the height for them usually matches the climax of the movie, which is like, again, where a climax usually is towards the end. But in this, their height of their engagement and their excitement and our investment, like, oh yeah, this is awesome, it's like in that middle. And then after that, it feels like weird. Like, wait, I thought these guys were friends and we're just like vibing and going to pool parties. I didn't want to be in jail and getting fired. That's not what I came here for. So it's definitely like a 180. I think it's a better, I don't know, it's hard because Goodfellas is like, we feel like this as a comparison to Goodfellas, go back and forth, but like in that movie it's very gradual, but in this movie it's obvious they really wanted that cut at the 80s, because like with the gunshot, which is just like a great scene, that whole scene. And then with it ending in the gunshot, and then it just says, like, the 80s is just, like, so, such a cool way to make a movie. I don't know. He is, he just has, like, a really interesting way of filmmaking that is so different from the language that other people use, which is why I enjoy watching his movies. Even when I don't always love his movies, I think that they're really unique in the way he constructs them like that.
Yeah, I don't really love his movies at all. This is probably the first one that I've, like, actually, like, liked more. That mm-hmm. wasn't just like, oh, yeah, this is a good movie. Like, there were a couple things that were interesting, you know? Like, it was one that I was like, oh, I actually, like, enjoyed the whole, pretty much the whole time I was sitting down, like, watching it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's, I think, because it's definitely his most, like, crowd-pleasing movie, which yeah. is weird to say, because I think, like, there's it's obviously like a very adult movie, and there's a lot of like things that are made to make the audience like, I don't know, like things that you don't put in like a mainstream movie, I guess. But I think in terms of how fast it moves and how many like really fun scenes and cool characters mm-hmm. there are, it is his most mainstream in that way compared to something yeah. like The Master, which is like, who are these people? Like, this is these are the weirdest people I've ever seen.
Yeah.
But in this, like, they're a lot more relatable even.
Yeah, I just think he is so funny that he is, like, so chaotic for no reason. Because, like, he this movie, it's chaotic. His thing is, like, I mean, when you, like, sum it down, it's like, he just thought, oh, yeah, this story's interesting, and I'm going to make the whole thing about the suspense building up to how big this dude's dick is. And then it's, like, yes. with his most recent movie, all the promotion around it, he was like, oh, yeah, I had this teacher that I was in love with, and, like, this whole movie is basically came from the idea. I'm like, dude, I don't know what is going on in your
so
brain.
He's so funny.
But he's so chaotic, which I love, because I think that, I mean, even if I don't love everything that he does, I appreciate that he is, like, just does whatever the hell he wants
just
to do.
Just going for it, you know.
And, you know, vibes with it. And that is all that matters, I guess. But
he's making Magnolia, and he's like, I'm just going to have frogs fall from the sky now. I think we're just going to have frogs fall. And he made frogs fall from the sky.
Yeah, the dude, I don't know. I would love to see other, like, scratch ideas that he's come up with, you know, that never
yeah.
made it to anything. Just, like, random right. notepad notes, iPhone notes, where he's like...
Yeah, like, if this is these are the ideas we're getting, how crazy are, like, the scrapped ideas?
Yeah,
like
these are the refined ideas. No, but I do love... That was one thing that I thought was really interesting about this one, is his way of storytelling is, like, a lot of the people's relationship to his character is literally, like, this guy's dick, because it is he is a porn actor. And so it's, like, a lot of it, I mean, they never show it until the very end. Well, show the
right.
prosthetic.
Well,
they never
the
actually.
The prosthetic, yeah, right.
Show the fake dick. But, like, That is such good storytelling that I don't know that a lot of directors would make the choice to do that. That, like, a lot of directors would be, like, you know, making the choice to say, I'm not going to show it until the very end, and it's just going to build all around it, and the story kind of, like, I don't know, like, it's almost this mysterious thing, and then it's kind of like the final scene.
Yeah.
Which feels weird to talk about it, but it's like, he is a very good storyteller in the way that he constructs, you know, the themes and the way that he specifically wants to, like, build suspense and build the story and make the character arcs and stuff.
Well, and I think the character arcs are a good conversation because, again, this movie is constructed very strangely, and he is kind of the main character, but I would say it's more of an ensemble story. Yeah. Because I bet if you add up screen time, there's a lot of characters that have close to the amount of screen time he has, if not the same. I think it's just interesting the way that it approaches character and arcs, because no one really has, like, a really overarching character arc. It's more about the group as a whole and just watching them evolve over time and, like, how their lives change and how how the experiences we watched in the first half affected their lives in the second half.
Well, and how they change together, really. Like, how they grow as a group is more the arc. Like,
yeah, right.
Yeah, like, it's all about how they're one collective character. Like, the character is their film crew. That is the character of the film.
Well, and I love, too, how it's also, like, about the changing film industry with the tapes, and they're like, you got to move to videotape because that's the next big thing. And it's almost like these people are holding on to the past in a way and what they loved about the 70s, and they're just trying to hold on to that energy. And then in the 80s you see, like, how it slips away, but then at the end they just come back and they're like, you know what, we're just gonna live our lives. And
they even show that with, like, Don Cheadle's character, where they have that line with that girl where she's like, your cowboy outfits are totally, like, 5 years ago. Like, we're not even doing cowboy outfits. Like, it's just not popular anymore.
Hey, I love the cowboy outfits.
Oh, I do, too. He is the best character in this movie, let me tell you. But it just, that is, it's a good point that, like, a lot of what's being demonstrated is that they're living, like, they're trying to almost play catch up, but also live in their own little, like, bubble.
Well, and they all have, like, these, I mean, the director has, like, he has these grand dreams of making, like, this huge art film in the porn industry, where it's like, I'm just gonna make this really big film that moves people. And it's just about these guys that they have these crazy dreams, and they're literally, all they're doing is making these crappy movies at this house. Like, all these movies, that's one thing I noticed in this one too, like, they don't go to a set, they're just all made at this dude's house. It's like they're repurposing these rooms in this pool area for all of these movies. And I just really think the main thing I like about this movie is just the camaraderie between the characters and following that story, because I think if you're trying to attach to one character, it's not gonna work for you. And I think even the first time, that might have been some of the issue I had with it, where, like, I'm trying to follow Dirk because I'm assuming he's the main character.
Yeah.
But if you're only following his story, I don't think this movie has enough for you to stay engaged. You have to watch it as the collective, like you were saying. With Don Cheadle's character, again, I think his character is one of the best, because he was really, like, showing that these people are just, like, real regular people that have lives and things that they want. And with his stereo system business, and when he tries to get that loan, and he's like, I'm literally, like, I did everything that I was supposed to do, can't you just give me this loan? And he's like, no, you can't. And I just think that a lot of times too, in the porn industry and with sex workers, like, you can forget that these are real people, and they're just trying to live their lives and have, like, a life. And even with movies, like, because I think it's also about film in general, like, we can forget that these are real people. And That's why I love his character, because I just think he really represents the human side of the group, where they are just like regular people that want to have like a cool outfit and have a stereo system business and do all that fun stuff.
Yeah, definitely. And like even that scene where he, with the like shootout in the restaurant, like where he basically has to make that decision for himself of like, what am I going to choose here? Because I could probably get away with taking this money. You know, like you can almost see him processing through that he just had this situation where he was told that he was never going to get it normally, and realizing that his normal life was never going to achieve what he wanted because of the industry that he works in. So that was really interesting to kind of like, I don't know, add on to his character.
Yeah, well, and I think that a lot of times people don't even get at the point in that scene where like he's the only black man in that restaurant and there's three people dead and he's just standing there.
Oh yeah.
And like, what? And it's the 80s and it's like, this is the worst situation that he could possibly be in. And so you have that paired with that he just went to, he got denied his loan because of where he works and who he works for. And so he's like, I'm just gonna take the money and I'm going to just do what I feel like I need to do. And I love his character. I also love Dirk and Reed's relationship. I think they're also a very fun pairing.
Yeah, they're funny.
Cause I don't know. I just love. And then you have Philip Hoffman trying to get into like their group the whole time.
I love when John C. Reilly's character is first introduced and he's like, have you seen Star Wars?
Yes. People say I look like Han Solo.
Wow, that was a good line. That was probably my favorite line.
Well, and he's making the margaritas. Like, how much do you bench? You say first. No, you say first. I love their dynamic. It's really fun. It's really hard to talk about this movie without talking about it for like 2 hours because there's just so much to say about it. And you can just kind of go in circles because I think that's what the movie does. It's just like the movie just swirls around. It's meant more to be taken as a whole rather than like chart out the entire arc of the movie. Like, this is the exposition and then this is where the rising action is. Like, it's really defies all of the conventional ways that you talk about a movie, except for the opening scene, because that's a great scene. And maybe one of the best needle drops in movies
ever.
Like, when it cuts to that song at the beginning on the title, man, what a great, and it's the one shot through the whole the restaurant.
Yeah, right.
That's so good. I love it. Wow. I also like when they're doing the dance sequence in the restaurant, like later on in the movie.
Yeah.
It's like this most 70s thing ever. It's so funny.
It definitely has a lot of good little elements like that, like just little niche things, like them buying the clothes right before that and stuff like that. That definitely gives you like a closer vibe to the era and like really tunes you into like what they're going for and the kind of people that they are, like the universe that they exist in.
Right, like lots of little details like that. And also lots of scenes where, even though it's only the second time watching it, I'm just saying, like, oh, right, this scene. And, oh, yeah, I really like this little part. Because there's a lot of really great big set pieces that, like, last for 10 minutes, and then they go on to the next thing. And I really think that is a big part of what makes the movie great, is that there's so many really vivid scenes that stick out in my mind after I watch it, like the scene with the firecrackers, which is another great scene of building suspense.
Yeah.
Which is so good. The one, like the movie that they make, like the James Bond style movie. Mm. Again, the recording studio. There's just so many little things like that where it really helps the movie live on past when you watch it, like because you can really vividly recall those things.
Yeah, definitely.
And with the music too. Like you hear one of the songs and then you're like, oh right, this is in Boogie Nights when this happens, or with the pool party when there's like five songs in one like 5 minute scene, which is just incredible how it is like song after song.
And yeah, like, just all kept right, going.
Another song. I know. Well, that was when I really noticed the music, when I was like, this is the fourth song in a row that's like a banger, and this is the same scene we have been on for like the last 3 minutes.
They just don't make them like that anymore.
No, they don't. Well, honestly, you know, people gave mid-90s hate, but that movie had a great soundtrack. So
yeah,
I think that's one of the few movies in the past besides Licorice Pizza, which is like Paul Thomas Anderson going back to the valley and doing like the same thing over again. Not saying it's bad, I'm just like saying it's very similar in his approach, but there's very few movies that have soundtracks that are all just like popular songs anymore.
Yeah, right.
Which is sad, you know, because I like a good film score, but you need sometimes I need that pep back in there. And this does have a good film score, that one part, like the really climactic part when he's getting beat up and stuff. Like, I don't know what song that was, but that was a good little score that they put under that.
Yeah.
So you can still use film score sometimes. Anything else to say about this one before we move on?
No, again, there's like so much, I but don't it's think like so. Hard I to... thought it was fine. I mean, I liked it. Yeah. So
it's just like a fun movie, you know? Like, it's just really fun to watch for me. I have a really fun time.
Yeah, it's definitely a vibe, that's for sure.
This is one of those where, like, I wish I was good at quoting movies because there's a lot of quotes in this that I definitely could pull out.
There are. Yeah, I cannot quote movies. I will probably not even remember that Star Wars quote next week.
When have you seen Star Wars?
I would love to pull it out sometime, but it's not going to stay in my brain, unfortunately.
I know. It's a really bum. The only line that stays in my brain is from Godfather 3. Just when I thought I was out, they pull me back in. And that's my one movie quote that I have.
Wow. That's a good one.
Well, just when you guys thought you were out, we're going to head to an ad break before we pull you back in for our next movie.
Oh, man. Wow. And we're back.
We have left the 80s and gone back to the 70s.
Yeah.
To 1977, which is actually Boogie Nights starts in 1977. So technically these movies,
wow,
at least the beginning of Boogie Nights, takes place at the same time. And they both set in California.
Yeah.
So cinematic universe?
What are the odds? What are the odds? And they're close to this. The kids are close to the same age at the beginning of the movie.
Right, which is weird because like Mark Wahlberg definitely is not that young when he made that
which,
movie.
Like,
so
obviously it's a good thing.
Right, a very very good choice. Which no, maybe he didn't carry that over into his most recent movie, but he did that in this one. Do you know that was originally they wanted Leo to play that role, but then he took Titanic instead.
Aww,
I know.
I could see Leo doing that role.
He obviously made the right career choice. And also,
yeah, I think Titanic is a better fit for him anyway, especially young Leo.
Right, because it's like a more attractive kind of role. And I think that like Mark Wahlberg isn't a good actor, and so him not being a good actor I think is good. Because like I think it actually is like what the character needed to be a bad acting.
Leo could do Boogie Nights, but Mark Wahlberg could not do Titanic.
So true. So true. Man, imagine if Mark Wahlberg was the Titanic.
It wouldn't have worked. It never would have sold as much as it did.
And then would all the teenage girls gone to see Boogie Nights instead?
Yeah, probably.
And Boogie Nights would be the Titanic of wow, what a multiverse that would be. Anyway, though, we're not talking about Boogie Nights
anymore.
Yeah,
we're not. Because
we're talking about
20th century women.
Oh, it takes place in 1979, so I was 2 years off. But
it's close, though.
It's close enough. Close enough. And this is a semi-autobiographical film that was based partially on Mike Mills' childhood and, like, upbringing. So
yeah.
I think it's interesting that they both are, like, even though Boogie Nights is an autobiographical, they both are movies that kind of stemmed from their childhoods, you know,
yeah,
and stuff that they happened to them during that, so a little interesting parallel again. We have another synopsis here for 20th Century Women. So let me just read this so anyone listening can just get a feel for what this movie is about. In 1979, Santa Barbara, California, Dorothea Fields is a determined single mother in her mid-50s who is raising her adolescent son, Jamie, at a moment brimming with cultural change and rebellion. Dorothea enlists the help of two younger women, Abby, a free-spirited punk artist living as a boarder in the Fields home, and Julie, a savvy and provocative teenage neighbor. then it's like a line to help with Jamie's upbringing. That the way it's written looks like it really works, but like reading it out loud, it doesn't work.
If you read it visually, but, yeah.
Right. Anyway, that's the movie. And do you want to explain why you picked it?
Sure. I would love to. I watched this movie a couple years ago, I think, like maybe 2019, and I liked it. And I thought the soundtrack was really good.
Wow, another good soundtrack.
It's so good. Very different because it's a lot of like punk, but it is very good. I had made a list when we had done our last cinema swap of some like potential movies so that whenever we do another one, I don't have to like scroll through a crap ton of movies again. And I knew that this one was on your watch list. And I actually was trying to choose between, I did have on the list another Mike Mills film. And I decided that this one would be the way to go because of the soundtrack and stuff. Because I thought that that seemed like your vibe. And it has the whole like Talking Heads thing going on.
So I love the Talking Heads.
Oh, Noah will love this. But it definitely is one that I liked, but I thought that you would probably like more than me. Like, it's more your, this is more like your style of movie than I think mine, even though it is also mine. So that was kind of why I picked it. And then it was a Mike Mills movie, like I said, and he's kind of
in the conversation.
In the conversation right now. So I figured it doesn't hurt to kind of like dig into some of his other films.
Right. And probably his most popular one.
I would say this is a little bit more popular than Beginners.
Yeah, and I think it will be more than Come On, Come On, just because it has more stars and it's like a more mainstream idea, I think.
Yeah.
So I think this one will remain as most popular. So is my thoughts now. I really liked it. I thought it was a really fun movie. It's very 2016, like, which is when it came out. Yeah. Like, it feels very much like 2016 indie movie.
Yeah.
Greta Gerwig's in this, and like this is right before Lady Bird. Like, it has a very similar A24 and like early A24 style movie, which I like, so it's not a bad thing. I think that there's a lot of things I liked about this movie. It's interesting. I really liked the first two acts. The third act is when it kind of didn't fall apart, but like it didn't wrap up maybe in the way that I would have preferred it wrap up. Not like
I feel the same
story.
Way.
The story didn't wrap up in the way like I wanted a different ending, but like just the way that they went about the ending didn't feel as satisfying to me as I would have maybe liked it to be. But I really do think that it's a like very watchable indie, which isn't always the case with them. There's a lot of really fun performances, good character dynamics, which I think is really important in a movie like this, where it really feels like these characters are friends with each other and know each other and have like a really deep relationship. Because without that, I don't think it obviously wouldn't work at all. And that was probably my favorite aspect, was just the dynamics between the characters and watching them bounce off each other and figuring out like, oh, this is what is annoys this person about this character, and this is their relationship, and just seeing that all shape and form. Similar to Boogie Nights, you know, it's also a very ensemble movie. Because I think when I started it, I also was thinking like, okay, this is going to be this one kid, and it's just going to be like about how he was raised by these three people, you know, and it's going to be a very linear, like, oh, now he's got this, this, and this, and this, and then boom, he's a real man. I don't know. That sounds like I'm mocking it, but like, that's what I was just picturing in my mind, which I was fine with. Like that very linear structure. But it's really, again, more about the collective and how they all are growing over this certain period of time in their lives, and why this period of time is going to be important for them when they are older, and how it's like all a formative moment for them in different ways because they're all at different ages. Which maybe is why the ending didn't work for me, because it is very much the ending of like an ensemble movie where like this is where all these people are now. And I think for me, I was more attached to the like raising the kid aspect of it and then having their relationships be like the side plots. But then it was like, wait, is the mom the main character of this story? Because that's what it felt like in the ending. But I don't know. It was just a little confusing for me there. But I did really like it. I thought it was really fun and sweet.
Yeah, it has some great scenes, too. Like, the different scenes at the skate park or, like, the skate ramp are, like, so, I don't know, like, it really captures that vibe of, like, who he is and who he's trying to be without, mm-hmm. like, telling you. He doesn't even really skate there that much on the ramp.
Yeah, you really don't see him skating the ramp at all.
He just skates to the ramp, but you can tell that, like, he's trying to figure out, like, how to balance his interests with, like, trying to be cool and trying to be a dude and trying to hang out and have fun with the friends and, you know, go to punk shows and stuff. But also, like, he's this kid who is sensitive and loves his mom and, you know, loves his friend and the girl living with them. And so it's, like, it's very interesting to see how the different, like, settings affect the way that Jamie, like, is responding to the situation and, like, how he's experiencing it, which is pretty cool, I think. But, yeah, I like the way that Mike shapes his characters. I think that he does a really good job of giving you interesting side characters and interesting characters that, like, no matter who is on the screen, you're invested in, like, what's happening still. Mm. So even when it was, like, you know, Dorothea talking with one of the other characters or Abby and the other housemate living with them, like, it's not completely detracting from the story. Like, even if it is kind of mostly about Jamie, like, it's not totally taking you out of the story to kind of get an idea of the life that's surrounding Jamie through these other characters, which I definitely can appreciate.
Right, yeah. And all the characters have such well-fleshed-out personalities and character traits that it really, like, each character has something about them that you remember and you can latch on to. I would say, I don't remember his name, but the guy that fixes the cars, he was definitely my least favorite. Like, he was fine, but I was the least invested in his story.
Yeah.
But obviously, like, he is, like, out of the five, on the bottom of, like, the importance in the story.
Yeah, I mean, Jamie is the least invested in him, too, so.
Right, yeah, that's true. Very true. I do think it's interesting with Jamie because I did see some stuff that were saying, like, oh, there's these three great lead performances and then this other kid that's, like, not really that great. And I mean, he's not doing a lot. Like, he's doing some stuff, but I think it's kind of supposed to be a more passive role because it's all about this stuff going on around him that he's experiencing.
Yeah.
And if he was too active in the narrative, it would kind of take you out of the... Because I think you're supposed to really identify with his character and, like, really follow his journey. And if he was too, like I said, active in the narrative, had more of those really specific personality things that the other characters have, I think it might take away from the impact of the story where you're really following along with him and watching him grow.
Yeah, and I think his character really serves to, like, he is trying to soak up everything he can. And if he had too much of a personality, then, like, it would totally ruin the movie. And I think,
like, why do you need to do all this if you already are, like, a fully formed person?
Yeah, like, he was just subtle enough that, like, I thought it worked. Because I think you can definitely see him branch out in some of the scenes where, like, he's dancing with Abby and stuff like that. Yeah. But I think it, like, truly proves who his character is when he does the breathing thing and passes out. It's like he's just kind of there functioning in this universe and, like, letting things happen while, I don't know.
Letting,
like,
things happen to him.
Yeah, like it's
he
not...
didn't make that decision for him. Like, he doesn't even have an answer for why he did the breathing thing. He's just like, oh, I just did it because they were doing it.
Yeah, like, none of his decisions are, like, I mean, like you said, like, I don't know that Jamie even is technically... It's hard because usually the protagonist is the person who's making the decisions that are shaping the, like, moving the story forward. Mm-hmm. And I think technically that would be his mom. that's doing that.
Yeah.
But the story is really about him, definitely. Like, him at the center of this universe, which is so interesting to me, because I think if anyone else had done this story, it would be very different, and definitely wouldn't be as good.
Because most coming-of-age stories are about, like, oh, these kids are finally turning into their own people, and because they're being very rebellious, and they're breaking all the rules, and it feels very active character in that. But even in the one scene here where he is rebellious and it's like, oh, I'm gonna go to LA and go to a show and you can't do anything about it, it still feels very much like not his choice, because it's framed as like, oh, he's just doing this because he's mad at me. And so it really frames his character like he's just letting things happen to him and reacting. And that's really what growing up is. It's like, well, it's one, figuring out how to become your own person and make those decisions and, like, figure out who you are. And for the parents, it's about learning how to let your child be a more active participant in the world and not control every step of their life, you know? And I think we see that journey with the mom and him, like, It's about him growing into this person and her trying to let go of that and him trying to figure out how to actually take control of his life, which is interesting. And like you said, I think if another person had done this, it would have just been a lot more of like kid.
The basic, you know,
kid does some stuff and gets a little some rebellious stuff and then grows at the end. But in those movies, again, it's very much framed as like, he's taking control of his life now, but here we really see the behind the scenes.
Yeah, which is cool.
Mm, yeah, for sure. With the ending, what kind of is off for you about it?
I just think the energy just isn't there.
Hmm.
And like maybe that was what he was going for, or I mean, obviously it's what he was going for. But it kind of like, there's a lot of these very emotionally heavy moments throughout, you know, where they have that argument and there's kind of, you know, his emotional heartbreak over Julie going on. And it feels like that the ending just, it just kind of happens.
Yeah.
Obviously it doesn't need to be some big drastic thing.
Right.
And
exactly.
I do like the conversation they have in the field where she's like, what did you expect me to do? Like, you want me to fix it for you, kind of. And I think that's good. But then I don't know, like, it feels like it just kind of flatlines from there towards the end, where it's just like, oh, okay, and this is how everybody's life ended. So I feel like there could have been, for me, a little bit more energy in the ending. Like, a little bit more of, I don't know, bringing them all together and whatnot. But, I mean, that's just my personal opinion, because I think he obviously had a vision of what he was going for, which, you know, good for him, because I still like the movie. But
yeah, right, like you said, it is an ensemble piece, but it really is about how that is affecting Jamie. And I really do think for most of the movie he is still at the center of it, but the ending frames it, like I said, a lot more like it is about the ensemble, and it's about each individual person rather than how he is being affected by them. And he really gets like the least closure. And it, again, not like I need a big closure scene, but we have like no closure at all with his character. And it gives us the most clear closure with the mom, where it's like, obviously she's a very important character, but I was much less invested in how her life ended, but more like how her life affected Jamie, because that was what this movie was
about. Yeah, like more about what, like that ending monologue be more about like what he learned from each of them, and like how, like saying where they ended up, but then being like, and this is what I did from what I learned from Abby, and this is what I did from what I learned from Julie. Like kind of going down the list of like, you know, that how everything made him grow to become the man that he became. Because that's really what it is about, is how these women and this other random dude helped him become...
20th century woman and man.
you know, but it was about him, you know, coming of age and becoming a certain type of person and how they were sort of guiding him to become, you know, this specific person or achieve better things and think better about the world and about women. And I definitely wish there would have been a little bit more closure on that, like you said, just to kind of drill home the weight of, like, the people around you affect the decisions you make. Like, the people that you surround yourself with can have a major impact on the type of thoughts that you develop and, you know, what you're critical about in the world.
Yeah, that's a great point. And with the ending, I think it was obviously really trying to, like, close out that theme where throughout the movie everyone has their own voiceover and, like, gets their own backstory.
Yeah.
Which kind of works for me. It sometimes throws me a little off, but I think it's integrated well. But I think that's why at the end, then they have, like, everyone, like, this is what I did, and then this is what I did. I think actually maybe the ending would have been better if he had just said what they did in third person. Maybe you don't even have to add, like, Abby did this, and I learned that you can, like, be yourself, or, you know, like, just having him maybe narrate their what happened in their lives would have kind of relayed to the audience, like, they were important in his life, and I don't know, it might have just kept the same theme of, like, he's the center of the story, but then there's these branches off of him that, like, really affected his life, you know?
Yeah.
And that might have actually tied it together more for me, because if just he was, like, narrating what happened after the story, after the movie. But, you know, it's one of those things, too, where maybe if I watch it again, I know you watched it twice, so maybe it won't be like this for you, but one of those things for me, maybe, like, if I watch it again, I'll be able to see the overarching structure a little better and know where it ends up and try to watch it from that point of view as well. Because it's always hard on the first watch, because you're never not going to go into something with some expectation. And maybe I was just going and thinking it was a different kind of movie. But from what you're saying, I think there is, like, the main reading of the movie is really, like, it's about him, obviously, and how these people affected him. But maybe it works a little better if I watch it again. I don't know. I just really think, like, the last scene is so weird with, like, her flying in the sky in the airplane. I'm like, this wasn't even, like, set up where, like, she was talking. She never talked about airplanes. Yeah. It would have been better if she was, like, on Wall Street with the stocks. I don't know.
Yeah, or, like, just driving her car. She never talked about wanting to fly. Yeah. No, yeah. I definitely know what you mean.
Like, it was trying to be, like, a Pixar thing almost, like, an uplifting, like, this person lived a full life moment. And I'm like, did she? Because, like, this plane doesn't have any significance for me. I don't think that we've talked about planes at all for this movie.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Maybe they just really wanted to fly a plane.
I guess. I don't know.
You know, good for them. Yeah, I don't have too much more to say about this one, really. Great needle drops. We didn't talk about that at all, but the soundtrack is really good, and it's integrated well, I think, into the story. It doesn't ever feel very, like, out of place. And it's interesting how it's both non-diegetic and, like, diegetic. It kind of goes back and forth where sometimes it's just, like, overscoring a scene, but then you find out, oh, the song is actually just playing in Abby's room. So it's, like, really integrated into the world in that way, where it's not just, like, a peripheral, this is trying to set a mood for a scene kind of thing. It's really, like, this is a music that is in their lives.
Yeah.
And that they are that is currently, like, affecting all of them. That I think that was a very good use of music.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It's a movie.
It's a fun one. It is, you know. It is a movie that was released. Both of this one is streaming on a few things. Canopy, I think. Hoopla, I believe. Showtime. So most people, and I think it's, like, on Netflix a lot. So really,
yeah,
it might come to Netflix again very soon.
Yeah, this is a very easily accessible movie.
And then Boogie Nights, I watched it on Netflix last year, so it might come back at some point. But it's also on Tubi right now, so
yeah, that's
both pretty accessible. So if you want to check those out, they are available for you to listen to. What to not listen to watch, you know, it's very late.
All right, so this week's question of the week, which you can answer on any of our social channels, just search Secondhand Film Critics. We'll post an Instagram story, Twitter, Facebook, whatever, or you can message us or email us your answer at secondhandfilmcritics@gmail.com. And the question is, what is your favorite movie soundtrack? So we're not talking about the score here. We're talking about the full soundtrack. So maybe it's one of these. I don't know. Maybe it's Guardians of the Galaxy. Maybe it's School of Rock. Maybe it's, I don't know. I can't think of another one off the top of my head. I can think of good needle drops, but I can't think of a good...
good full soundtrack, maybe.
There's a lot. There's a lot. Let us know once we post the question, and we'll share the answers in next week's episode, which, as we said at the top of the episode, should be a Scream episode unless something changes.
Yeah, it's it should be. I think we'll get it. I think we'll got it.
I think it's gonna happen. I'm confident.
Yeah, follow us on our social media platforms. Just search Secondhand Film Critics. We'll pop up there. Look at our website. Got some blog posts. Lots of fun stuff for you to check out while you wait for next Tuesday's episode.
Very cool.
Yeah. Well, until next time, I'm Noah.
And I'm Kayla. And we are your secondhand
film critics.